And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
In today's episode of the Sixers Beat, Rich and I give out midseason grades, rating whether or not players have met expectations, exceeded expectations, or disappointed at the midway point of the season. One quick note is that this podcast was recorded prior to the game in Utah. That doesn't impact any of the content. In fact, we always intended to release this on Sunday, but every now and then you will hear us say last night's game. And in those instances, we are referring to the Oklahoma City game. Again, that doesn't impact the content at all. I just want to give you the context so that when you hear it, you're not confused. Enjoy the podcast. All right, welcome everybody. This is Derek Bodner, joined by the former number one overall pick in the 2002 NBA draft out of Baruch College, George Santos. How you doing, George?
Wow, I didn't realize we were getting the Santos jokes.
Sorry, I was... So Rich is on the road right now, and because of that, he was running about 10 minutes behind, and I was reading what has to be like about my 16th or so New York Times feature. I've read on Santos. What a crazy, just absolutely crazy story. The only thing in this world more fraudulent than the Sixers' top five defense.
Ooh.
But and with that transition out of the way, we will do mid-season player grades. Just as a disclaimer, and you know, we've been doing this for a long time now, but for anyone who is a new listener, we mostly base our grades off of expectations, and that will be modified slightly based off of where a player is in their career. At least for me, it is. For example, an older player maintaining productivity is a higher grade than a younger player who stayed level, because even if maybe you weren't expecting that player to take a leap, there's still some lost opportunity there in them not doing so. So it's disappointing. This is mostly subjective. You could mostly break it down as B's and A's mean they exceeded expectations, D's and F's means they didn't, and C's are sort of like somewhere right in the middle. All right, so let's start off with Jaden Springer. No, just as every... Don't turn off the podcast,
hey,
everyone.
Did you see his fourth quarter against Detroit? A. 10 points.
That's true. Career high 10 points. Good for him.
He's just been recalled.
He has been recalled. Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. That's true. I wonder if they'll keep him out there for the whole road trip now. Who knows? We'll see. All right. So we will start this off earnestly with Joel Embiid. 33.5 points, 9.9 rebounds, 4.4 assists, 1.1 steals, 1.7 blocks per game, shooting 53.6% from the field. Sixers offense is 4.3 points per 100 possessions better with him on the floor, and their defense is 7.6 possessions better.
I said B plus. What about you?
Yeah, that feels about fair. You know, I think it would be... I think there's two things. One, his defense has been a little inconsistent. And two, his start to the season, he was just not ready to start the season. So I think B plus is fair. I might be tempted to go A minus just because, I mean, he's having a pretty much historic offensive season. I certainly could not go A with the slow start and with the defense being inconsistent. But I could be talked into an... I'll start off being a little optimistic because I might be pessimistic at various other points in this podcast. I will go with an A minus on Joe.
Yeah, I mean, my expectations for him are super high, I guess, is my point.
Yeah.
Like, so, no, you know, he can be an MVP candidate and I can still be like, yeah, B plus.
Yeah, but I think the reason why I was probably thinking A minus is because you've been an MVP runner up 2 years running and you got better. That's just that's not always something you do.
No, and the fact that he continues to get better offensively is just like, it's remarkable.
It's wild.
You know what? I'm looking at his true shooting right now. I'm sorry, A minus. 642 is just that's ridiculous.
Especially because he's not even shooting a three ball right now.
No,
he's shooting 33.7% from three.
No, and you know, I get that he's turned it over a little bit more than he has in past years, although that's starting to come down. You know, again, career high an assist too. Like, I think he's you even see it in last night's game against Oklahoma City, where I think he screwed up one time, but they just people double him and he just gets them good shots. Like, whether it's his assist, and that's the thing, the assist percentage does not count for, like, when he pings it across to somebody and it's another pass or two that gets the wide open shot. But I don't know, when he gets doubled, it's like, I feel very confident this team is going to get a good shot right now. And I think just for him to scale up and be, you know, like that elite level of like offensive fulcrum, like it's different from being a scorer and then being kind of the chess master, the guy who's quarterbacking the gym, who's, you know, moving all the pieces around. And he's gotten so much better at that stuff. And yeah, the highs have been crazy. Like the Jazz game, one of the best performances I've ever seen. You know, he's missed a couple weeks with the foot injury. I didn't know how much to ding him for that. Maybe I dinged him at a half letter grade for that. I don't know. Whatever. But, and you mentioned the defense. It doesn't feel like it's been as good, but it's still more impact. Yeah. Like, he's still making more of an impact on that end from an on-off standpoint. They certainly just need him to kind of just stand in the middle there. Look, another great season for him. And even if I were to give, you know, I'll go A-, but even B+, like B+ for Joel Embiid is like super impactful basketball.
Yeah. Yep. Hard to get too much argument from me there. All right, let's go on to his running mate, which could end up being one of the more interesting ones here. James Harden, 21.8 points, 11.2 assists, 6.5 rebounds, 43.7% from the field, 38.2% from three on over seven attempts per game. And the Sixers offense is 8.3 points per 100 possessions better with him on the floor, and their defense is even.
I went with a B.
Yeah. I think, you know, it's funny. If you look at the stats are, to me, probably an A-, somewhere in that range. Like, I did not expect him to go into the, you know, 3 years ago James Harden. I always thought best case was when he first got to Brooklyn. But if I was being honest, I didn't really expect him to gain even a step back from, or a step, not a step back, to gain back a step from where he was last year, maybe a half step because of coming back and having a summer to work on his basketball conditioning and whatnot. Maybe he's actually gained that half step. If you squint, maybe a little bit at times, but he's not substantially different athletically from where he was. So I think you could be a little bit disappointed in that. But in terms of what he's done, stat-wise, I think it's been very good. That being said, the defense is, and you should never have any expectations he's going to commit the defense. You should never, ever, ever. I'm sort of going against my own grading curve here, because there was no person in this world who has watched James Harden over the last decade who thought maybe he'll come in with a, you know, reinvigorated to play defense. That's just not who he is.
You just have to watch it every night, though. It's the problem.
Yeah, that could be it. That could be it. But they really do need him to really commit the defense if they want to have a chance to really win in the playoffs. Like, that is a massive liability. And that's going to, if I could give him an A- based on expectations, just based off on his offensive stats, I've talked myself out of that. And I might even go B- right now, just because the transition defense is so bad. The perimeter defense, the closeouts, it just freaking drives me insane so much. And you're probably right. Because like I said, there's no reasonable person that's going to have expectations for him to play defense. So that wasn't on my bingo card coming in. But it's just, I have to watch it every night now, and it just drives me up a wall.
Yeah, look, and he's the biggest culprit. Their transition defense was a nightmare through like seven games of the season. It's a decent chunk of this, and he was probably the biggest culprit. You watch a game like Oklahoma City, it's not just that, like, you're bad at defense. It's that you're not trying. It's like the ones.
Yeah.
He gives up like 4 to 6 points a game where he's just lazy, just like on a switch. You know, somebody runs a ghost screen or a step up screen, and he just like doesn't communicate with the guy, and somebody goes right by him. Like, I can live with okay, like him trying to move his feet side to side, he's got to like play with like 90s rules and hope the refs aren't calling him with the hand checking and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I understand that part. It's just the lazy ones. It's like if he could cut out those, you know, 4 or 5 possessions a game, that makes a world of difference. And I guess the hope would be, you know, in the playoffs, he'll do that. I would imagine he might cut out like 2 of those possessions a game in the playoffs, not all of them, because he kind of is what he is at this point. But yeah, that's I guess that's my ultimate calculus, is that offensively, even though he did not regain really any of a step at all, you look at his finishing numbers there, he's not getting there as much anymore. He's not doing as much. That said, like, he's been really good. I think we mentioned before the year we expected him to probably lead the league in assists. I think he would be doing that right now if he had qualified for enough. I know he's kind of right up there with Halliburton. He kind of has these monster games. And frankly, there are moments where he is just still a dominant offensive player, especially if he hits a couple of those step backs, which he's making at a decent clip this year. He's also shooting a little more off the catch, which is good to see.
Yep.
He's starting to shoot even a couple more of those. I'd say over the past 10 to 15 games, like, they're not just off offensive rebounds, which is what he used to shoot them off. Like, he would only take catch and shoots when somebody would kick it out after an offensive rebound. Now he's starting to take some when Joel swings it to him on the wing, which is good to see. So I have the same calculus as you. And, you know, I think he can kind of be the scapegoat when they are frustrating and they are lethargic, because let's be real, he can have a little bit of a lethargic style. He's a genius player, but he's not a high energy player at all times. But I ultimately went with B for those reasons, because I think the stats are really good. Really, really good.
You're probably right. A B is probably more fair. I might have dropped that B to B minus just because of last night's game. That might be what's going on here, which is not fair. But we are humans as well.
I have one other key too. They're +2 with him on the floor and Embiid off the floor, and that's like 800 possessions at this point. It's a big part of it, and he deserves some credit.
That's a big part of why they're 25-16, even though Joe's missed all this time.
Yeah,
100%. He look, okay. We can talk about the defense all we want. He has been good this year. Do I have my concerns about it translating to the playoffs? Yes, of course. But in terms of what's happened here in a regular season, especially when you factor in the fact that, you know, the free throws that he used to rely on, he's not getting there nearly as much. His transformation as an offensive player and the passing, look, as much as the defense frustrates me to watch, the passing I love to watch. I love how he sees the game. He gets a lot of really good looks. I think him and Harrell, we've starting to see a lot more of that like we expected. They have been more competitive with being on the bench. He's a really good fit next to Melton when Maxey's been out. All that stuff. You have to give him some credit for that, for sure. For sure. A B is probably more fair. It's just they played the Thunder last night, and my mind's still there.
Okay. Let's move on.
All right. So I guess we'll just go right down to Tyrese Maxey. 21 points, 4.1 assists, 3 rebounds. 45.7% from the field, 39.1% from three-point range on 6.3 attempts per game. Sixers' offense is 1.8 points per 100 better with him on the floor, and their defense is 0.06 better with him on the floor.
I'm waffling between B and B minus. I think I'm going to settle on B minus though. And look, you know, I think that's partially because you expect him in his third year to make a big jump, and he hasn't made a huge jump, but he's also been hurt. I think we can understand that and still feel pretty good. You know, obviously his defense hasn't gotten much better. It's weird that right now, coming off this injury, I think he looks really good physically over the past week. Like, he's getting a bunch of N1s in transition. He's driving. He just can't shoot straight right now. Like, his rhythm on his jumpers, like, you're like, man, that has no chance of going in right now. I think, like, maybe we had too high of expectations for him, really everybody, you know, when they were talked up as championship contenders coming into the season. It was like, you know, Maxey turning into, you know, like a top 25 player or something like that. And that's probably too high of an expectation for him. But yeah, like, I, you know, his scoring's up a little bit. I still wish he would shoot more threes. I kind of wish, maybe this is a little bit of a hardened problem. I wish they they found a way to utilize him better. Like, it feels like he ebbs and flows, kind of his monster games and his nothing games. So it's, I kind of struggle to put into words what I feel about Tyrese. Just feels like could have been a little bit better to this point, I guess is my point.
No, I think B minus is fair. To your point, he's shooting 30% from 3-point range since coming back on December 30th. And an even half of those makes came in one single game against the Chicago Bulls. 5 of his 10 made 3-pointers came in that one game when he shot 5 for 7. So yeah, he is struggling from 3-point range since coming back. He had one good game that sort of looked like he was back on track. We all celebrated it. And then he has gone, 3 for 17 from deep since. So it'll be great when he gets that shot back. I do agree with you. He's looked pretty good physically since coming back. Certainly looks like himself. You know, outside of that, I think the jump here to 21 points per game is, it's not if he ended the season with these averages, it wouldn't be a failure, which is why he's getting a B minus. It's not the huge jump that I think some thought he could have taken, but I did think there was probably a cap on how much he would score this year with Harden, with Harris, with Embiid, obviously. I wasn't expecting him to turn into a 25, 26, 27 point per game scorer yet. I do think he has that upside. Yeah, he's playing well. He hasn't completely blown your socks off, though. I think that's fair.
Yeah, and look, I mean, I think C is about average, so maybe that's what the grade
B minus is a decent enough. He took a step, just not maybe the step a lot of people were wanting.
And I think for him, that comes off, from us as more disappointing, because last year he took an insane step. Like, he got an A+ last year. That was wild how much better he got. And really,
do you actually know your grades? Do you have your grades written down somewhere?
No, but I assume that's what it was.
I should keep them. That would probably be smart of me, but no. And since you can never listen to a podcast back, we would never be able to go find those. Shame.
Mm-hmm.
Shame. All right, let's move on to. But you're right, because of the leap he took in year two, I think some people probably had too high of expectations for year three. Progress is not always linear, as someone once said. All right, so we have Tobias Harris here up next. We're just pretty much going right down the most used players. Harris is up to 16.3 points, 6.3 rebounds, 2.6 assists, shooting 49.5% from the field, 38.1% on 5.1 three-point attempts per game. The Sixers are 3.6 points per 100 better on offense when he's on the floor, and 0.3 worse when he's on the floor on defense. I'm sorry, 0.3 better when he's on the floor. Sorry, I misread that.
I have him in the same thing as Maxi, where I'm struggling between B minus and B. I think the sentimental part of me wants to give Tobias a B, just because I don't know. I'm a sucker for the guy who, I guess, gets the demotion and handles it pretty well.
Yeah, and he's handled it fantastically. Absolutely.
And I think deserves a lot of credit. Great guy. Make sure.
I mean, he legitimately is a really good guy.
He is an unbelievable guy. Yeah. Yeah, it's hard, right? Because he's a fourth option. But I think some of the rebounding issues are pretty frustrating, as you pointed out.
The defense issues too. Like, he can be a complete space cadet on defense at times.
He's shooting more threes this year, although he's definitely cooled off over the past, 3 or 4 weeks here. But there was a time when the Sixers were shorthanded when he was really freaking good for them. And, I think he probably had his month-long span where, he contributed to the 25-16 record, too. He was, I don't know. I think, I'm going to go B. I really liked how Tobias, who has played more than a lot of their top guys as well, basically, that week or so when all of them were down, and even when James came back and Joel came back, he was all right, I'll score. I'll score, and I'll you can run some post-ups through me and I'll be a good soldier and I'll be happy about that. And then he went right back to firing three. So it's kind of like as we move down this list, the James Harden B is more important than the Tobias Harris B because he just means more to the team. Like he factors more, like he affects the offense more from what he does. But I'm going to give Tobias a B. I think from what my expectations were going into the season, like I didn't know if he could handle this role. And obviously he's still not a perfect fit. But I think overall, I think he's roughly done his job. So B.
Yeah, I'll go B minus. I think I think I was honestly, if you would ask me this 3 weeks ago, I would have said A. Like pre Christmas, I probably would have said A. Again, which doesn't mean that Tobias Harris is an A player. It means he has far exceeded what my expectations were. Over the last 10 games, though, he is shooting 24.4% from three. Threes are only taking up a third of his shots, whereas earlier in the year they were about half. Yeah. He's only attempting 4.1 per game over that span. It definitely looks like 4.1 per game in 34 minutes. It definitely looks like he is second-guessing some where he was second-guessing almost none to start the season. And look, Tobias has limitations that are always going to be there. Perimeter defense, transition defense. He's a part of a significant part of their struggles in transition. Like I said, he can be a space cadet. And it's not effort, like he's giving effort, but he will lose his man. He will lose guys streaking down that will run behind him. He just won't see. He will do closeouts against Jalen Williams. Forget which one it was. That are just confounding. He will have those moments on defense. And you combine that with now a little more hesitant of a three-point shooter. And I do think I have to, you know, take a little bit of a mark off of that. They need him to be that high-volume, accurate catch-and-shoot shooter. And look, shooters will go through slumps. I don't really care that he's shooting 24.4% over the last 10 games, over the last, you know, 3 or 4 weeks or so. I do care that it seems like it's starting to get into his head a little bit. That's the one thing they need him to keep doing. And he hasn't completely stopped shooting him. It's not like this is a Jimmy Butler situation here. But I would like a little more volume than he's had of late.
Because he does have those Harris over me? Sorry.
Yeah. Because he does have those other deficiencies in his game that make him an awkward fit here as a fourth option. That being said, again, not giving him a bad grade. It's just the last couple of weeks do influence it a little bit for me. B minus, he has accepted his role really well. I give him a lot of credit for that. That's really tough for people to do, especially for a player now who is, you know, a year and a half away from being a free agent. Like, you want to be able to showcase yourself. He has not once even remotely complained. He has accepted his role. When you need more out of him on offense, he has stepped up. When you need him to be a lower option on offense, he has willingly done that. A lot of credit. Great dude. Just let it fly. That's it. I'm not expecting you to become, you know, Bruce Bowen overnight. Just let it fly. That's all I want.
I mean, let's be real. He is Bruce Bowen. Bruce Bowen would only dream of this volume from 3-point range. Bruce Bowen made like 1 3 a game from the corner, and everybody's like, man, what a corner 3-point shooter he was. Oh my God, 1 3 per game.
The game has slightly changed.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I get what you mean. I agree. I'm a softie.
I was not comparing him on that court. Yeah.
I'm a softie when it comes to Tobias.
He's fantastic.
I enjoy him as a dude. I enjoy him. I think he's done a decent job in his role, but you're right. The last month has been rougher. Yeah. And
he was real good to start the season. Real good in the role they needed him to be, for sure. A lot of credit.
That's enough. We're good on Tobias. He, by the way, they just said, that was pretty scary when he went down in the,
yeah, no, he OKC went down game. Hard.
Good to see him bounce back. He is,
and he came back in like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Every time somebody goes to the locker room and looks like they died, it seems like they come back in a couple minutes.
The Sixers, knock on wood, I don't want to jinx it, but the going back to the locker room with like a really scary injury has not been terrible for them so far this year. I guess Maxey's really the only one that has really shot him in the foot. And
did you really just say shot him in the foot when he broke his foot?
Yeah.
Is that intentional?
No. Okay.
PJ, I can go over the stats. PJ's not a stats player.
So I was getting a kick last night. I was watching, you know, as we sit in the media room, they have the pregame show on, and, you know, they'll show the Sixers starting lineup. And underneath all of the players are the points, like, or whatever. So it goes.
I thought you were going to go to the Twitter handles.
No.
Because he doesn't have PJ, Twitter.
Well, that's a step up in my book.
Yeah, true.
Anti-social media. So they show Maxi, 21 points per game. Harden, like 20, whatever it is. Tobias, 16. PJ,
three.
Joel, 34. Like, which one stands out there? I was wondering, like, would it be more embarrassing if they just put, like, his minutes per game there, like, or whatever, like, or if they, like, change the stat up? I don't know, like, deflections or whatever. It's
screen assists. He can be our screen assist guy.
It certainly stands out. So where to rank PJ?
All right, hold on. We read everyone else's stats. We're going to do his too.
Okay.
3.3 points, 4.3 rebounds, 0.8 assists, 0.6 steals, shooting 40.2% from the field, 37.3% from three, which is fucking amazing. That's just absolutely fucking amazing. I can't remember the last one. And the Sixers are 2.8 points per 100 better when he is on the floor. And they are actually 1.4 points per possession worse when he is on the floor on defense. So they're better on offense by 2.8. Worse on defense by 1.4.
Okay, so couple things here. PJ in the first month of the year, I thought was actually pretty good.
Yeah.
And I think he was pretty good, especially when Joel went out. You kind of saw some of the chemistry that he and James had. He was making plays on the short roll. He was doing some positive things, specifically offensively. The last 2-3 months have been really, really bad. So, you know, I don't know exactly what the... I don't know what the final result is here. I'm just going to go D. How about that?
Okay.
I'll give him the plus.
I will give him the plus just because expectations weren't super high. Like, we all knew who he was on offense. I'll give him a D plus.
Okay.
Maybe I'm just in a generous mood.
Well, I think so, one of the other issues, and maybe this isn't his fault, but another issue is that they suck when he plays center too.
Yeah.
Which is not good. I'm not putting that all on him.
That's why when you looked at it and I read those on offs and they were better on offense and worse on defense.
Yeah, it's because
that is almost entirely driven by those center minutes for sure.
Which is unfortunately.
He's averaging 2.4 points and shooting 31.3% from the field over his last 30 games.
Yeah, I mean, Simmons-esque minus the assists.
Yeah. Yeah. That's in 27 minutes per night. I've never seen anything like that. Legitimately, I don't know if I've... Like, is that Roberson levels? What did Roberson used to average?
Dude, if you look at... I'm going to look up... StatMuse has an unbelievable stat where they have all the usage rates.
I know at one point him and Matisse were the two lowest.
Okay. The lowest usage rate this season... And I don't know how they're okay, they're qualifying it as you're on pace to play 2,000 minutes over an 82-game season is what this is. So I think that's just like you haven't been injured the entire year, like
right.
Playing few minutes. Okay, so the third lowest usage rate on that list, Grant Williams, 12% usage. Third lowest of that list. Then there is you
PJ,
fall
is
off
that a, like what, five?
You fall off a cliff and you get the Reggie Bullock, 9.3% usage rate. Grant Williams is like kind of right near a lot of other guys, basically. Reggie Bullock is not close to the rest of these guys. 9.3% usage. PJ's usage is 6.4%. It's another cliff from Reggie Bullock.
Yeah. No, I just looked it up because Roberson, you know, he's sort of like the one you go to who's like the D only guy. His career average is 7.3 points per 36. Over the last 30 games, PJ isn't even averaging half of that, 3.2 per 36. It is like we talk about, you know, oh, we all knew PJ wasn't brought in to score. Well, like you sort of expected him to come in and score like 6 or 7 points per 36. Like if he was going to play 30 minutes per night, you expected 6 points out of him per night. Sort of like by accident, one corner three, maybe one offensive rebound, a foul here and there, something like that. Averaging 2 points over a 30-game stretch, I've never seen.
I expected him to make 1 3 per game. I did. And he's not he's not there.
And by the way, his defense is not as good as it was last year.
No. He had a couple good games in November that you thought he did well, but yeah, it's not as good. And to add to my point about the center minutes, I mean, they're giving up 124 points per 100 when he's playing center. It's like wild. Now, look, I think some of that is you play him with Maxey and Harden, and it's like, okay, that might just be untenable for everybody that's not like Jaren Jackson Jr. or somebody like that, or Joel Embiid, you know? That said, though, like he just – and also I think the offense has gotten progressively worse to the point where I'm now worried, like, is this in his head? Will he ever snap out of this?
There has to be some confidence issue there. There has to be.
He's passing really poorly. He just is not like the theory of him playing center. They've tried it a little bit in recent games. Like you got to run to the corner. I don't understand what they're doing. Like if he sets a screen for Harden, just double Harden. Like he's not going to make a 4-on-3 pass in time. He should. In past years, he would. But right now, he's not. So that's why he's getting a D for me. It's just the past couple months have just been so viscerally bad. And I will still hold out hope that he will figure some shit out and at least be, you know, ready to go to war in the playoffs, even if he's not the PJ Tucker of past years. But man, it's a rough watch right now. There's no getting around it.
I mean, they need him. They need him for the playoffs. Absolutely. I don't know how much longer. Do you think there's any chance Doc replaces him in the starting lineup? Like Doc seems like he's gung-ho for PJ Tucker right now.
Yeah, on the one hand, yeah, but on the other hand, he's not afraid. He's like, look, there are a lot of nights where he's like, okay, Melton's going to play in the fourth quarter.
Oh yeah, the closing lineup he will definitely. Yeah.
Well, for sure. I mean that for sure. That strikes me as like what he actually thinks. And
yeah, but you are also like your starting lineup's always going to have the most minutes. It would be nice if they functioned well together. I mean, I'm not sure what lineups PJ really does function well with right now.
I don't know either. Okay, let's stop depressing people.
That was a tough one.
The next one will be better.
Do you want? I was going to ask if you just want to get the other depressing one out right now, or I guess we'll.
No, let's work later. Work the way down in terms of minutes and
all right,
usage.
All right. Well, the next one in terms of minutes per game is actually. Oh no, it's Melton. All right, so D'Anthony Melton here. We are at 11.6 points, 4.7 rebounds, 2.9 assists, 1.9 steals, shooting 42.6% from the field and 39.7% from three on six attempts per game. The Sixers are... Why am I not finding his name? Hold on. Here we go. The Sixers are 0.1 points per 100 possessions worse on offense when he's on the floor. And 4 points per 100 better on, or no, they're 4 points per 100 worse on defense when he's on the floor. So the on-off numbers, not really buying those, but I guess we'll get into that.
Yeah, I'm not buying them either because he's getting my second highest grade. He's getting a B plus. And I think part of the reason he's getting a D plus or B plus is that he had a nagging back injury for a lot of this that was like not fun to play for. Should probably check back in with him, see how he's doing. It seems like he's playing consistent minutes. I wonder if I'm giving him too high a grade because he's just a competent two-way player and we don't get too many of those.
No.
You know, it's like a sight to behold. Like, okay, this guy is a threat on both sides of the court most
nights. He dribbles, he shoots, and he tries on defense. Oh my God. I didn't know they existed.
I really kind of just dig the Melton experience too. And look, there are issues. Like he tried a reverse layup last night and he missed, he missed the entire square on that one. And that's just like, look, that's part of the experience. And there, you know, there've probably been five or six nights where it's just like, oh man, he's going to shoot 14 or 15 times a night. And he's just guessing like this is not even going anywhere near the basket, but like you read the numbers, like, you know, he's shooting to the back of the baseball card. He's definitely getting steals and rebounds and every Mr. Do Everything or Mr. Do Something, you know, he's providing all of that. The athleticism is so, so necessary on this team. Yep. I really think I'm very impressed with him when Joel swings the ball or Harden swings the ball to him and gives him an advantage where he can, you know, he can make the 4-on-3 pass or he can attack a closeout or do whatever. He makes opposing defenses pay a decent amount of time when they do that. That's good to see. It feels like to me he can function in a closing lineup pretty easily. I'm a fan. Like, just even the game against, I guess that was the Indiana game, where he just comes down with the massive offensive rebound and then hits the three. I just feel like you want him out there at the end of games. I knew he was good. I didn't quite know he was this good, though. Yeah. And so I'm going to give him a B+.
No, you asked, am I grading him too high just because he's competent on both ends? I had him at an A-. Like, I even went a little bit higher. Just because, like, this is a guy who, again, I think we all had pretty high expectations. And he's come in and just exceeded them, and pretty clearly exceeded them. I don't know if anyone could really make an objection to us saying that. It would be very tough to do so. If you're going to nitpick, really the only thing you would nitpick on defense is getting around screens. You could do that a little bit better. Outside of that, he's a versatile defender. He's an incredible off-ball defender, a very competent to very good on-ball defender, depending on the matchup. He makes his catch and shoot threes. He has just enough off the dribble. He can handle the ball in a pinch if you need him to. Finishing at the rim, you might want to nitpick, sure. But for what you need him to do and how you need him to play, whether that's off of Joel, whether that's off of Maxi, whether that's off of Harden, he can fill really any of those roles. And that kind of youth, versatility, two-way competence, it is incredibly, incredibly valuable. Like, most of the people we complain about are people who are complete liabilities on one end of the floor, which, by gosh, Sixers seem to collect like baseball cards. But he's just playable in almost every lineup next to any combination of stars, and that is so incredibly valuable, especially for a team that, quite frankly, is built a little weird. You've got a post-up center, and then your other guy's a defensive sieve who you need to counteract. He's really, really valuable. And going back to that -4, or the defense being 4 points per 100 worse, I would guess that's just because he played so many minutes when Embiid was out of lineup. The Sixers relied on him so much during that stretch. He was not out for an injury while Embiid was out of lineup, that I think that's probably factoring in there as well.
Yeah. I he's the anti-Thibault, and that I am not buying. Similarly, not buying the on-off numbers just because his are bad, and I don't really care. I like what that guy has given them. I really like what he gave them during kind of the Shake Milton show, too. Like, mm-hmm. Milton ramped up his usage and played well in those games as well. He's good, and frankly, like, you know, we talk about PJ and, like, not knowing what he's going to give you in the playoffs. Like, PJ's got to show me something, because De'Anthony Melton is clearly one of their best five players at this point. So,
let's see here real quick. Lineups with Melton and Embiid have a +4.5 net rating and give up 112.2 points per 100. All right.
I bet that gets better.
Yeah. All right. Moving on. I guess we'll just go to Milton, Shake Milton, who is at 10.2 points, 3 rebounds, 3.5 assists, shooting 50.7% from the field, 36.1% from three. The Sixers are 2 points per 100 possessions worse when he is on the floor on offense. Again, I think that's probably in large part because of how much they ask him to carry the offense and play when Harden and Embiid and Maxey were all out. And the defense is 0.8 points per 100 better when he is on the floor.
So I went B+ here, which is funny because I started the season basically calling him out. Like, are you an NBA player with the way you're going? Like, he was really rough as a 3-and-D option. But I think this is a mea culpa in some ways. And just, he needs to have the ball in his hands. He needs to be a consistent part of the rotation. He needs to just be somewhat involved. And
yeah.
Frankly, since, you know, mid-November when he got his shot and he kept the team afloat for like 3 weeks, which was super impressive. Like, I do think we talk about, you know, the Sixers' weird pieces, all of these things. They have a 10th man that literally kept them afloat for 3 weeks. Not a lot of teams have that.
No.
He's pretty good in that aspect. And now he's just kind of a rotation mainstay where you know, he gets some of his offense in transition, just kind of driving at guys, spot up 3-point shooter. I kind of wondered, like, coming into the year, like, I thought he should play, but, you know, you looked at all of the potential options that they had and, you know, all the lineups they could have thrown out. It didn't seem like it was a foregone conclusion that he would play. And to start the season, he didn't really play. So, I just think his last probably 2 months have been really good. So, B plus.
I'll go B. I think if you just read the stats, those are certainly exceeding expectations coming in. Like you said, you weren't even sure he was going to be in the rotation. So for him to be playing that well and that much, that is a good year. You know, if you factor in what he did during those, you know, couple of weeks there without Harden and Maxey, that was really, really impressive. And it makes you, on the one hand, interested in what more he could give you, but also frustrated by how can we get some facsimile of that from him when he's not going to be dominating the ball. He's been good. He's not been nearly as noticeable here since the Sixers guards have come back. You expect that a little bit. Like I said, maybe his role is just to be sort of like, you know, competent guy who can eat some minutes when Harden and Maxey are there, who can then step up in a pinch. Maybe that's just what he is for this team. But he's done well. I mean, look, he's shooting 50% from the field and, you know, he's playing well. He's playing well. The three ball is what did he shoot last year? I feel like last year was real low, right?
Yep.
Last year was 32.3%. So he's shooting the ball well. Maybe not quite as well as you would hope. Maybe not quite as well as you expected when he came out of college, but he's shooting the ball well. It's been a weapon for him. He's played well.
I guess I just really value those 3 weeks because they could have went off the rails there. They really could be a 500 team right now, and he was
probably right.
A major part in stepping up.
Probably right. Yeah. Certainly, if we were giving out this grade a couple of weeks ago, or however long ago it was, grade would probably be much higher. Yeah. That was at the front of our minds. All right, George, 9.4 points, 2.4 rebounds. That's real low. Come on, George. 44.8% from the field, 41.6% from three on 5.6 attempts. Threes make up over 2/3 of his shots. The Sixers are... Where's George? Hey, George. The Sixers are 1.7 points per 100 worse when he's on the floor on offense, and they are 3.4 points per 100 better on defense when he is on the floor. I would guess a lot of that is because he's tied to Joel Embiid on those backup units.
Not always. It's Trez minutes.
A lot. So
I'm gonna give George a B plus just because I really view him in such a narrow role when we talk about, you know, impact and you know, Harden's B plus or B is ends up factoring into the team a lot more. George is on the team to make threes and he's scoring at the highest rate of his career. He's making his 40%. He's had a couple games where he's freaking bailed their ass out just by making threes. It's gone a little bit cold over the past couple of weeks. You mentioned his rebounding. I don't expect him to be a good rebounder, though.
No,
I don't really expect him to defend. And
still frustrates me, though.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm going to go B+. That's a pure expectation play. I think George has been good. It's a very limited role, but I think he's been good.
No, I was actually debating an A-, and I talked myself back to a B+, in part, I think, because he's probably just not consequential enough to get an A-, which is that's not our grading criteria at all, but it felt right when I was writing it down. His numbers are actually almost exactly like they were last year. 9.4 points instead of 9.2, 2.4 rebounds instead of 2.7, 41.6% from three instead of 40.3, so they're pretty close. Which surprised me, I think, a little bit, because I felt like he was having a much better year than he had last year.
He is, though. He's shooting 57% on twos. And
no, you know, I agree.
And he takes a couple of those a game. They're very slow. You remember those.
Yes. He is having a better year, and he's had some monster games, but he's also been pretty consistent. And I think the consistency is probably what has impressed me the most. I think... B+ might, if you're just going based off of expectations, you might be able to argue for an A-. Because I think he has exceeded expectations pretty handily. He's just not relevant enough for an A- for me.
I mean, I expected him to make threes, though. So, like, I don't want to sell him too short. Like, I expected him to do pretty well in his role. I guess where you could say A-minus is, like, you kind of wondered, like, is there a chance he's not in the rotation heading into the season? Like, I had him in. Like, I kind of figured, okay, shooting, good fit with Embiid, all those things. Like, and we know he's a good regular season player. I figured he was a safer bet. But going into the season, you know, when you have the rose-colored glasses for all of these guys, and we're about to get to a couple of them, you wonder. No. Maybe George is out of the rotation at some point, and he really is. He's been like their sixth or seventh most important player. So
there was a chance you could, to your point, there was a chance that if, you know, Melton works out and Tucker works out and House works out, you could see him drop from 23 minutes per game last year to 14, 15. Like, that was, I think, in the cards. Not completely out of the rotation. He's too good of a fit with Embiid. He is way too quick of a trigger. He has way too much gravity to completely be out of the rotation, at least in the regular season. But there was a thought his minutes might drop. And it's dropped a little bit from 23 to 20. But the fact that he's hung on to 20 minutes per game just shows you how well he's playing, because he has earned those minutes. I mean, his trigger is so quick. Like, the way he can get that shot off is just so impressive and so valuable when he's paired with Embiid. He's played well in his role.
And
for sure.
And Harden too. Like, you know, when the Sixers go to those Harden bench units and they just say, we need to outscore the other team for 4 minutes, you need Niang on the court, because a lot of times he's being covered by the slow power forward who can't guard Harden. They double and Harden finds hit, and they just play pick and pop all day with them. So I value what George has done, but again, it is a limited role.
All right.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to michelobultra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Dan House Jr., 4.8 points, 2.0 rebounds, 0.8 assists, shooting 47.3% from the field, 33.3% from three. The Sixers are 5.4 points per 100 possessions worse on offense when he's on the floor, and 5.7 points per 100 worse on defense when he is on the floor.
So here's the question. Am I being too charitable when I say D minus here?
I wouldn't say you're being too charitable. To be an F, Fs are sort of like A pluses for me. Like, it has to be real extenuating circumstances for me to give it out an F, and I don't think he's quite reached that threshold. So, no, I wouldn't say – I would say you're being fair.
Yeah, and I think it just boils down to maybe our expectations were a little bit too high.
Yeah, maybe.
For him. Maybe he was the worst player of all time to get tampered for.
Oh. I'd need that list in front of me. I can't imagine there's anyone. Well, if you consider the consequences – then Joe Smith still gets that title just because of how much Minnesota lost.
Yeah.
But in terms of just pure, like, Joe Smith was obviously a way better player than Danhaus. In terms of just worst player to get any penalty, it would be hard to be beat.
And he just hasn't been good. And I mean, Thibault is playing over him now.
Deservedly.
Deservedly so too. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't really have much else to say. Like, he just is not really fit in well with this team. I mean, he makes me laugh when he shoots his step back, catch and shoot threes. He's pretty outrageous personality in the locker room, which is,
yeah,
has nothing to do with his on-court play, but good for him, I guess. And that's all I got, really. He just hasn't been very good.
No, he's fun in the locker room. For sure. For sure.
Yeah. Him and George are probably the two most fun guys in the locker room, I would say.
Yeah.
But George is
I'm right there
playing
with
a lot better, so.
D minus. All right, let's go. Let's finish up our two remaining wings before we get to the backup center battle. Matisse Thybulle, 2.5 points, 1.1 rebounds, 0.5 assists, 0.8 steals, 0.3 blocks in 11.9 minutes, shooting 41.4% from the field, 32% from three. The Sixers are 0.3 points per 100 possessions worse on offense when he's on the floor.
Here's the big one, though.
3.8 points per 100 possessions better on defense when he's on the floor.
And that got hurt a lot by the OKC game, where, yeah, I believe he was a minus 27.
Yeah.
The plus-minus king for most of the season. First off, I think the right grade for Matisse would be incomplete just because he doesn't play enough, like, if you were doing it.
Yeah, he played very few minutes.
If I'm going to give him a grade in the small amount of minutes, and, you know, we are kind of poking fun at George and being honest that his role is fairly inconsequential, with Matisse getting this few amount of minutes, he's very much in the same boat, probably even less consequential than George. I did not have high expectations for Matisse coming into the season. I was pretty down on him after the playoff run. I definitely think the plus minus noise for most of the season, I'm just not buying it. Like, as far as an offensive player, I don't see much of a difference. That said, the Sixers have been better. They play a lot of zone. So I am going to say, in a very small sample size, I'm going to give him a B-. I don't know. I didn't really expect a lot from him. And the fact that they're okay in his minutes, I will go that high. That doesn't reflect what I think of him as a player as much, really. I think I still have a lot of skepticism moving forward, but it's kind of where I'm at.
This is funny. I think I'm going to give him a worse grade, but I think I probably like him better as a player than you. So I will give him a C+ as a grade, just because he's still on a rookie deal. At some point, you need development offensively so we can put these playability questions to bed a little bit. And this is another year closer to free agency, where there's been no offensive development, where his entire value on offense is either forcing a turnover and getting out in transition, or James Harden making magic happen. Other than that, he's pretty much unplayable on offense. And to have another year where we're saying that, when he's still young enough at 25 and on a rookie deal, it's a disappointment. I can't get that disappointment out of my head. Even though I had very little expectations, the fact that he's young means you're just sort of hoping to be surprised every now and then. And this is another year that went by where I'm not surprised. And that disappoints me. Because I do value his defense a lot. A lot. Is he perfect? No. He's not perfect defensively. But he would be such a key piece to be able to have on the floor for even 25 minutes per night. And if you could have him on the floor for 25 per night and not worry about the offense, he would be a huge, huge key piece. Do I think he's a defensive player of the year? Like, I feel like everyone on Sixers Twitter either believes he's the best defender in the league or should not be on a court and the defense is completely smoke and mirrors with steals and blocks. I think there's room in the middle. But I do think he's a very good and valuable defender. And that's why his offense frustrates me so freaking much. Because I still do not believe that you can put him on the floor against the Bucks or the Celtics and have them not completely take advantage of that. And that frustrates the hell out of me. And it frustrates the hell out of me because he should be a valuable piece of the rotation. He's just never developed on offense. So, he did not exceed expectations in any meaningful way. But the combination of Tucker and House being so frustrating and being so disappointing, the fact that his defense I do believe in, and the fact that the on-off numbers say what they do, yeah, it's a real combination of just I'm very frustrated by the offense while acknowledging the defense. I don't really know how to grade that appropriately.
Yeah, no, I think it's just a difference in expectation. I don't expect him to ever get better at offense. I just don't.
No, you're right. You're right. I don't either. I want to be surprised so I can embrace him. Because to be honest, like, I think I want to embrace him. Like, I really enjoy his defense. I really enjoy the value, just the fact that he can get you out in the transition. I mean, this team rarely gets out in transition. The fact that he can cause so much havoc. He can change the way a team plays. And I don't feel comfortable putting him on the floor because the dude hasn't made one step towards being a competent offensive player. It frustrates the hell. And I think when I get on Matisse, it's in part because it's like I'm disappointed because I do value what he can do.
Look, I agree with you. I think the defense is maybe not first team all defense level, but it's good. It's very good, and this team is dying for him to be playable.
Yes.
Dying for him to be playable. He would start if he was playable, honestly. Yeah.
You might even be able to make the case that he should start now, but that's, again, in part because PJ Tucker's been so bad.
Yeah.
And De'Anthony Melton's just about 2 inches too short.
We'll see. I would love to be surprised and he becomes playable, and even if it's just he has 6 weeks where he just shoots the hell out of the ball. If he has November 2019? Yeah.
Yeah.
When November 2019.
43% for like a month and a half.
If that happens in April and May 2023, that would be awesome. But I've been hurt too many times. I can't rely on that anymore.
His rookie year, he shot for, like, if he broke his rookie year down in thirds, he shot like 30% from three on the first third, 45% from three in the second third, and then like 30% from three in the last stage. It was crazy. It's crazy. It was that brief moment where we're optimistic. All right. Moving away from the wings, would you like to go Trez or Paul first?
Let's go Trez first.
All right, so Trez, we are at... I should have had that right up in front of me. 6 points, 2.7 rebounds, 0.7 assists, 0.3 steals, 0.5 blocks, 59% from the field, no threes. The Sixers are 0.5 points per 100 possessions better when he is on the floor on offense. 2.6 points per 100 possessions better on defense when he is on the floor. No, worse on defense. Yeah, worse on defense.
Yeah, and the Sixers have been decent in Trez's minutes. Like, it's another example of me not completely buying the on-off numbers. That's been almost a theme of this Sixers season, I would say. I have it right now. Trez is... should have this right now.
They're overall 2.1 points per 100 worse when he's on the floor.
Yeah, but it's a positive, though.
Worse than their other minutes. It's still a positive point differential. I'm just telling you the one page I have up. I don't have it.
Yeah, I should get this. I'm getting this up right now. Okay, they are plus 2.8 on the season with Montrezl Harrell. And your job as Sixers backup center is to not be minus a million. And plus 2.8 is a long way from minus a million. How much credit am I giving Trez for that?
Over the last 2 weeks, I'd give him some credit.
Yeah.
Before then, I'd give him almost none.
It's tough because I guess I just he is below expectations in terms of the offensive player that I thought he was. I don't have his numbers in front of me, but I've cited him a million times here and in my writing. His finishing numbers are just, it's not even close to the same guy. And like, he just blows a tire every time. Like shots that he would make in past years are really hard. Like, they're getting blocked. Like, maybe he's getting fouled on them. There was a play the other night. I think it might have been against the Pistons.
He is 8% off of his career mark at the rim.
Yeah.
65.2% this year, 73.2% for his career.
And that's gotten better over the past couple of weeks. So maybe he's starting to turn some things around. But, man, when I see him, like, have the other team's point guard on him, he shoots a hook shot and makes it, and then does, like, the Rock the Baby celebration. I'm just thinking, like, man, dude, that's, like, that's not a great shot. Like, I feel like 2 years ago you were putting that guy into the rim for a dunk. But, like, look, he has stabilized things. I think the defense is – fairly fluky. He does take the occasional charge, which I don't think should be charges. I am going to go with just a standard C for him on the year. I think you could talk me into a C+ just because of the on-off numbers, but it's a case where I don't really buy it for most of the season. And I thought he was going to be a complete dominant offensive player. And, like, look, I get that he looks like that against the Pistons, but I would like to see him against some awesome team once in a while really, like, take over the game in a second unit with Harden. And I haven't seen that enough this season. So I'm just going to go straight C for Trez. Might be a little harsh.
No, I wouldn't see minus. Quite frankly, I flirted. If this would have been 2 weeks ago, it would have been a D plus. I think the last 2 weeks have pulled him up. I think he's been significantly less than we expected on offense. And when you came in with the expectation that he was unplayable in the playoffs on defense, like, you expected the offense to be legitimately good. And for most of the season, it was not. Now, the last 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks, maybe even a month, he's been, and I think that probably pretty directly ties. First of all, I agree with you. I think he's gotten a little better inside. So maybe he is building himself back up to where he needs to be. Maybe there's another gear to go athletically. But I think a big part of that also ties to James Harden's return to the lineup and, you know, the fact that he's able to stagger with him and play. And even Maxey coming back, because that allows you to stagger Harden a little more aggressively. I think that's helped Trez in a big way. But still, for most of the season, most of this half of the season, he has not been the offensive impact that we expected him to be. And again, when you are a complete liability on defense, and I think for the most part, he's been a liability on defense, but, you know, charge here and there, surprising block here and there, but for the most part, he's been the liability we expected.
Yeah.
You have to be good on offense, and he's been good for the last 2 or 3 weeks, and that's slightly encouraging, but he has not been good for most of the season.
I mean, he's scoring on a per-minute rate. It's, you know, he entered the league in 2015 and 16. That 2015 and 16 season is the only year that he scored at a worse rate than this. And his true shooting is, it's the second lowest of his career as well. So when you combine those two things, I frankly think the Sixers have the offensive talent that, like, you know, I get that he's not playing with Lou Williams, who he had an unbelievable connection with in Los Angeles, but, like, come on, Doc knows how to use him. And there's, you know, Shake Milton, James Harden, Tyrese Maxey, there's enough, you know, shooting and playmaking on this team that he should be a better offensive player. So I went with C just because I don't know. Maybe I am buying the on-off numbers a little too much.
I would say for the most part, he has been who we thought he would be, just slightly less effective, which again, I think C is a C grade is being who we expect you to be, slightly less effective. I drop him to a C-. I don't think it's like a big condemnation from what we expected. Just a small deviation.
That's fair.
We skipped over Furkan based on what his offseason fight.
Mm-hmm.
I was honestly going to go incomplete for Furkan. I feel like we've barely seen him. He is shooting 34% from three, so that is disappointing, but we are talking about sample sizes that are low enough where a good, legitimately a good game could boost those numbers back to where. I mean, he's attempted 35 threes in the season.
He's also still tricking Basketball Reference because there's no way he's not a 50% free throw shooter for his career. I've literally never seen him make both.
what's he shooting on the season here? He is shooting 65.5%. Again, on
still
like,
too high. I've never seen him make both. So
on 29 attempts. All right, Paul Reed. I'll read off the numbers here real quickly. 3.2 points, 3.4 rebounds, 0.6 blocks, 0.7 steals, 56% from the field. And this will be our last one because we will skip over Jaden Springer. The Sixers are 13 points per 100 possessions worse on offense when he's on the floor. And they are 3.4 points per 100 possessions worse on defense when he's on the floor for a overall a negative 16.3 based off of their normal ratings, which is the worst on team.
As you mentioned on the last pod, he's played a lot of minutes with not the stars. And that's correct. An important thing to point out when it comes to those numbers. And I do think there have been times this year, there have been games like that Nets game at home, these Pistons games recently, although, you know, Pistons.
Yeah.
Where he's looked like a more confident and assertive offensive player. There's also been games where he shoots like an 8-footer on the baseline from the dunker spot, and he shoots it about 6 feet.
Doc and pulled him like, so quickly after that. He was gone.
Yeah. And so I don't think he's been as bad as his on-off numbers.
For sure.
Would
for
say. Sure. Like, that said, he hasn't been good. You know, no. And I think when it comes to Paul, I have higher expectations for him than Trez. I think, first off, I think he's got a more versatile skill set that is more has a chance to be better in the playoffs. I'll put it that way.
I mean, we saw it be better last year.
Yeah. He's also a younger player, too, where like you think he should continue to get better, where I know Trez is only 28, but it feels
it's
like
an
he's
old 28. Yeah.
Feels like he's on the downside of the curve for sure. I'm going to go D.
Oof. Oof. That is a tough one. See,
I don't like that I said it, but it's just like, and you know, like, look, like there's been games, like I thought he was really good in the Oklahoma City game last night.
It was.
Now, would it have been better if Embiid was on the court? Yeah, I think so. Playing with three fouls, yeah. But, like, he came into the game and did his job, and I also think this situation isn't great for him where, you know, if he doesn't play good and Trez, you know, gets away with the Jedi three-point defense for a solid month, he doesn't play.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think I just expected him to seize this job, and he has not done that, and he's not been the impact defender that I thought he would be.
So, and again, I think this is why it's important to keep in mind what we're saying when we say D. We're basing it off of expectations. We're not saying necessarily that a C player is a better player than a D player. We're saying that one player met our expectations and the other player did not. So I think when you put it in that context, and I think Paul Reed is a certainly as a playoff performer, has a better chance. I think what Paul Reed gave you last year in the playoffs is far above what I expect Trez to give you in the playoffs. Pretty much my whole basis for why he should play. But that's not what we're grading here. We're grading based on expectations. And I think a D is fair. I might go D+. After a good game, the Thunder game might be in my mind. You could even almost talk me into a C-. But I think that might be part based off what I want Paul Reed to be.
So I just wonder, in this NBA, where, you know, a lot of teams play five out and play this delay offense, he's terrible at that. Like, he's just never going to be good at that. Just not a fluid enough decision maker. Now, is that the only way you can play NBA offense? No. But also, like, he's not Tyson Chandler. He's not going to be like, all right, we're going to run Clint Capella. We're going to run, you know, 50 pick and rolls a game with you jumping up and being a lob threat at all times either, too. So I kind of find myself asking, like, what is the offensive?
Yeah. No, for sure.
And I
give him credit because, like, early in his career, he thought he was going to be, like, he was way out of control on offense. Now he's only occasionally out of control. Like, he has definitely dialed that back. But there's still a very real fit issue. Like, his jumper is nowhere near usable in the NBA. You can't use him as a pick and pop threat. He's a pretty good dive guy, but like you said, you're not going to feature him in an offense diving to the rim. And in terms of decision making, it's definitely a question mark.
He's a good finisher, but I always find it seems hard, right? It seems like disjointed. So when he does make a nice finish, you're like, it kind of stands out in a way that probably it shouldn't stand out, you know? Anyway, I'll close by saying this. I've been disappointed with him this year. If PJ Tucker is not usable at center, and if Trez is the other option, I would like him to be, I would like to give, if I'm Doc, I think you have to give him every chance to win that job by the time the playoffs are, just because I just do not trust Trez's defense in the playoffs, and I trust Paul's defense. So I don't trust it, but I believe in it more. Right. So,
yeah,
you know, that's kind of where I'm at with it, but it just, yeah, what is he offensively? And that's, I find myself, it's really through no fault of his own, because he really has dialed his game back in some ways. He's kind of gotten rid of the gunner impulses. You know, he's not playing like he's at Delaware anymore.
Yeah.
But it also, it hasn't fit into the puzzle as well as you would hope.
Yeah. No, I definitely think part of my disappointment comes from the fact that I really wanted him to take the opportunity he had and sort of squash that backup center debate and prevent Doc from going to his instincts, which is to revert to Trez. And he didn't play well enough for that to happen. I do still think that he is the one player who can perform, has a chance of holding up in the playoffs. So I would still like to see them let him play through his mistakes. But that's also part of why his disappointing play is so frustrating, because you really just wanted him to take the opportunity to run. I think being disappointed in Paul Reed's season is fair. I think it's also still fair to, frankly, be disappointed in Doc for not seeing the, I think, pretty obvious limitations that are going to be unplayable in the playoffs. In Trez's case, I think you'd be disappointed all around. Which brings us to the final person on our list, head coach Doc Rivers.
Oh man.
You thought you were going to get away without grading Doc? Come on, man. You know how the content machine works.
B minus.
Okay. That's fair. What if you're grading it just on what has happened in the... And look, we can go over individual decisions that we could all nitpick, and certainly there are a lot that we would disagree on. But when you look at a team that missed a month and a half of Harden, or was it a month? A month of Harden.
Month and a half of Maxey. 3 weeks of Joel, too.
3 weeks of Joel. And they're 25-16, and I think two games back from the two seed. You would have to say he has met expectations. You could also make a very strong case that, okay, that's fine. That doesn't mean I believe in him in the playoffs. I'm kind of there with you. I think there are pretty legitimate question marks about what he is going to do when the games actually matter. We've seen him win a lot of games. We saw him get the number one seed. This is not the part of the season we have questions about. But just based on the 41 games that have happened, again, while acknowledging that there are certainly things he does that I don't agree with, they have exceeded expectations. But
he's also an NBA coach. There's going to be things you disagree with. He makes a million little decisions.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
That's all.
That being said, and this is something we talked about here in the last podcast, a lot of what we just said, getting through injuries, getting through adversities, being close to the top of the East, that all is about to change. Because you did that with a really easy schedule. Like you said, they played 41 games. There are teams that have played 44 or 45. So you've had a pretty spread out schedule. I think second easiest strength of schedule so far in the league.
Yep.
Remaining schedule is the toughest. You're going to play more games than almost every team.
And it's road heavy too.
And it's 100%. So it's great that you can sit here and say we're 25-16. It's great that you can say we have the top four defense. But you're going to have to lean on more than that. You're going to actually have to execute here down the stretch here, because you're not going to have the top five defense if you keep playing this way. You're not going to be close to the second seed in the East if you don't start playing better. We will learn way more about Doc Rivers, even acknowledging the fact that they did get through adversity. And we will learn, quite frankly, way more about this team over the next 41 games, because the schedule, assuming there's not weird March shit, and there very well could be, because that's the way that the NBA works. But I almost hope that there aren't, because I think this team needs to be tested, because I do think right now they're resting on that record, resting on the top five defense. I hope they're tested, just because I want to see where they stand. And that goes for the coach too.
Well, and I factored that in to my B minus, because I think if you looked at the record and you looked at all the absences, yeah. I think he probably, like, against a tough schedule, would deserve a better grade than that.
I think Danny LaRue had him in his coach of the year running, and he's like, I don't believe him in the playoffs, but based on what happens, he's done a really good job. And I think what you just said is a key part of that, though. Like, he's done a good job, but the schedule gets real.
Well, and I'll also, you know, you touch on this, but this is also factored into my grade. I think he's okay in the regular season. You know, yeah. I get that.
Always has been.
Get that, you know, you get the DeAndre fiasco at times, and that's annoying. But I don't know. I think he gets you in a decent playoff position usually, and then that's when it becomes scarier. Now, I mean, like, look, this year has been crazy for him. Not for him, because I don't know how much of it he listens to. Maybe he listens to some of it. It's been crazy following the discourse on him. I mean, God, after every game, it's just...
Well, we know he's not completely off of Twitter.
No. No. No.
Did you ask Pop that question?
You didn't ask a question there. You just made an observation.
No, I just... I have various buttons.
So B minus. But yeah, it's going to get harder. And you know what's weird? Like...
It's B minus, but you only have about 25% of the grade in.
Yeah, and it's weird that, like, the question now is, can you fit this team together when they have all their guys? It's almost easier when you have Melton and you're playing, you know, Maxie's out and you have Melton just slide in the lineup and you're playing a bad schedule. Okay, you got enough talent to win those games.
How'd you phrase it a month ago? Doc is a 10 seed, beats Doc coaching a 2 seed every time.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. He's going to have the 2 seed now, but he's playing against a tougher schedule. So yeah, B minus, but we will see moving forward.
I agree. And I have a feeling that last grade might piss a lot of people off, but
either way,
just talking about the 41 games that have happened. All right. I think that's pretty good here. Ended up being an hour and a half podcast. I expected this one to run a little longer. So Rich, thank you for jumping on. Enjoy your road trip, and we will talk to you soon.
See you, man.